Star Island has been an idyllic retreat for conference goers for over a century. Today, island goers come to learn about meditation, bird watching, the history of the Isles of Shoals, or many other topics. These retreats draw a community of lifelong Star Islanders.
Oh, we're playing salt and pepper bocce. So you slide, oh!
Ann Shanks Etter is sliding salt and pepper shakers back and forth on a table in the dining hall with lifelong friends she's met here.
I mean, I was gone for 23 years, and I came back, and there's people I knew. It was traditions that I still remember, so things don't change a ton. Nice shot.
One thing that will never change is that keeping a hotel and conference center going on an isolated island takes brute force. In the high season, diesel generators churn 24 hours a day to keep the lights on. Filters purify water and pumps run constantly to push it around the island. Water from showers, washing dishes, and flushing toilets has to be cleaned at a miniature wastewater treatment plant near the shore. And supplies of all kinds have to be shipped from the mainland on diesel-powered ferries and cargo boats, says the island's director of facilities, Jack Farrell.
The island has always had sort of, an understanding of the limits of our resources. That's the nature of an island.
Farrell says making electricity with diesel-powered generators has always been a little contrary to that ethic of conservation.
At night when people went to bed, it was beneficial to leave the lights on because the generator was more happy when it had a full load. So some of our lights don't even have switches.
But in recent years, the price of diesel has soared, and those who live and work on the island want a more environmentally friendly approach. They're installing enough solar panels to cover a space a little bigger than a tennis court and a bank of batteries to store the electricity. That means everything will be on a switch and carefully switched off when no one's in the room. During shoulder season, spring and fall, the panels would provide all of the electricity the island needs, and in the winter, the island powers down. But going solar really only scratches the surface of the energy picture on Star Island. Despite being in a spot surrounded by abundant water, water accounts for the top three energy draws on the island. Hot water for washing dishes and laundry, a machine that purifies salt water for drinking, and the tanks that treat wastewater before flushing it into the ocean. So years before the work began on the solar panels, the nonprofit began investing in changes to water that would save them money right off the bat. Like a dishwasher that uses less.
With something that uses a third of the water, it's kind of a hat trick for energy because it's a third of the water supply, a third of the wastewater, and a third of the heated water. So this is a real win-win-win, I guess.
The hotel uses around 6,000 gallons a day and can store 8,000. Potable water comes from a couple of sources, explains Kristen Samard, the island's environmental service manager.
So we have two reverse osmosis units that we use. Those filter salt water to fresh water.
That's the first, which takes a lot of electricity, so they don't like to use it.
We also can take drinking water from boats.
That's the second. Every time the ferry brings guests to the island, it can drop off 2,500 gallons of water from the mainland. And the third is...
We collect rainwater off the roofs of the main buildings. That's the hotel and cottages A and B. We collect all of that in a cistern that's under the Atlantic House.
Some of that water is saved to run the sprinklers in case of a fire. And finally, the toilets are flushed with salt water.
Right, because we don't have enough water on this island, so it would be a huge waste of our resources to flush our toilets with this hard-won water.
Though it does mean that they occasionally have to scour baby mussels out of their pipes. So if you're looking to shrink your energy needs on Star Island, how do you tackle the water problem? First, run the reverse osmosis machines as little as possible.
Something we're trying to move into is filtering collected rainwater up to drinking water standards.
They're also installing another water tank in their cargo boat. Later this year, they'll update their wastewater treatment plant. And last year, they started sending most of their laundry to the mainland for cleaning. And then there's this guy.
We're in our cogeneration plant.
So
those who are listening is a very small shed.
Marshall Fry's official title is Island Engineering Technician. He's the architect of Operation Death to Boilers, which reimagines how the island heats its water.
I'm not actually an engineer.
Fry used a heat exchanger designed for use on a boat to suck energy out of the exhaust from the generator and use it to heat water. It started running for the first time on the day of our visit. That, along with some electric and propane water heaters as backup, totally replaced the island's ancient water boilers.
The big ticket item was getting rid of the boilers, and that saved us about a third of our diesel usage.
All of these changes together mean that before the solar panels ever come online, Star Island has cut its diesel use by around a quarter, or 5,000 gallons a year. Clay Mitchell is a renewable energy guru with Revolution Energy based in Exeter, who helped design the island's new solar setup. He says the solar panels might be sexy, but the real grunt work of getting the island over its diesel addiction is being done by saving energy first.
Getting that load down to a point where it could be managed and produced was the most important part.
Ultimately, though, Star decided not to ditch its generators entirely. The batteries and solar will work together with the generators in a hybrid system. Mitchell says electricity on the island will basically function like Chevy's gas-electric car, the Volt.
Where the batteries are running the whole system and the solar power is providing power to keep the batteries going. And then if the batteries get to a certain level, the generators have to kick on to keep the batteries charged up.
The generators would run basically only at night during the high season and not at all during the rest of the year. This is what's known as a microgrid, which is a very vogue term now in energy circles. The idea is that if each neighborhood had a little electric grid of its own, it would mean that fewer people would spend weeks without power after a big storm, among other benefits. So far, though, despite years of talking about them, there aren't many around.
I was at a conference recently where they referred to microgrids as something that's like unicorns or Bigfoot.
Susan McDonald is the community energy director at the Island Institute and helps islands all up and down New England's coast reduce energy costs.
Well, we do have microgrids, and they are these diesel islands in New England.
Diesel-fueled island communities pay upwards of 70 cents a kilowatt hour for electricity, which is four or five times what people pay on the mainland.
The price of energy in particular has really pushed people to think a lot harder about conservation and renewable energy in a way that some people think may happen on the mainland, if there was a carbon tax.
In other words, if energy prices continue to climb, one can imagine a world which starts to look like Star Island. Once it's all said and done, Star hopes it will be able to replicate the experience of Nashon Island near Martha's Vineyard, which the Forbes family owns, and at The Rock, or Alcatraz. Both islands installed similar hybrid systems. On Nashon, efficiency and solar have cut its diesel use by two-thirds. The work on Star Island is expensive. They have a hard time coming up with an exact cents per kilowatt hour number for everything they've done, but the solar array alone on Star will cost around $1 million. But in a place where diesel fuel is delivered at great cost by a barge a few times a year, a project like this makes financial sense. And as island manager Jack Farrell makes clear, their project is also driven by their philosophy, which is shaped by the island's ties to the Unitarian Universalist Church.
This is a special place, and it's here to be a place to imagine the world as it might ideally be, as our vision statement says, if I can paraphrase it. And we take that very seriously.
For years, that adage referred to how people treated each other on the island. Going forward, it'll also be a vision of what our energy grid could someday be. For NHPR News, I'm Sam Evans-Brown.